Salmo 111, versículo 2, dice así: las obras del Señor son grandes y quienes las aman las estudian. Hoy tenemos la gran bendición de tener un hombre que ha puesto en práctica esta escritura. Es un hombre que de verdad le aprecio mucho, es un doctor en físico-química. Suena así muy complicado, es físico-química, ¿no? Él es maestro en la universidad. Y de verdad, muy, muy agradecido porque somos vecinos, estoy aquí muy cerca. Acá, 20 minutos de la línea hasta su casa. Aquí muy cerca, en Tijuana, en Tijuana. Hace un tiempo estuvo aquí ya, nuestro hermano John, estuvo para acá, terminamos una clase. Y de verdad es una bendición porque aquí se le dice cierto, pero las obras no son grandes. Y este hombre que hoy nos va a predicar aquí la palabra de Dios, es hombre que estudia la palabra. Allá abajo, cuando salgan, se van a encontrar una mesa llena de libros, de audios, de cosas que él ha hecho, que ha estudiado y que nos permite ahora poder conocer también. Tenemos que dar una manera de camino para acá. Está grabando un libro también acerca del mormonismo. Pues él da clases, como les digo, enseña a las iglesias, a la iglesia de San Diego. Ha viajado por muchas partes del mundo. Nos contaba ayer la comida en África, en África, ha estado en Asia, ha estado en muchos lugares del mundo. Y ahora está en nuestra hermosa Tijuana.
Necesito esperar para mi computador. Es un gran honor para mi esposa y yo visitar a ustedes. Y, pero, como ayer en la universidad, no puedo enseñar o predicar en español. Pero, gracias a Dios, tenemos Mauricio. This morning I'm going to be giving you a class, and it's the title is Thoughts About the Book of Acts and Church History. Of course, there are many wonderful stories in the Book of Acts, as you know. But I want to look at the book in from the big picture to see what's going on. This book of Acts is a story of a movement that changed the world. Let's go to Acts chapter 1, verse 8. Now Jesus is here in the room with his followers. And he's giving them a vision. Let's read in verse 8.
Vamos a leer el verso 8. Pero cuando el Espíritu Santo venga sobre ustedes, recibirán poder y saldrán a dar testimonio de mí en Jerusalén, en toda la región de Judea y de Samaria, y hasta las partes más lejanas de la tierra.
Now think about this. Think about the people who are in this room. And think about the vision that Jesus gave them. I mean, who were these people? They had no education. They had no money. They had no power. They lived off in the hills. An unimportant part of the Roman Empire. They didn't speak the language of the Romans or of the Greeks. Their view of the world was completely different from the Romans and the Greeks. They had no political power. And Jesus said to them, you're going to share about me. You're going to bring me to Jerusalem. They're thinking, alright, maybe Jerusalem, okay. And then to all Judea. They're thinking, you're kidding. And then Samaria. We hate those guys. And they hate us. And then to the ends of the earth. You gotta be kidding me. Us? We're a bunch of, I don't know, hicks? How would you say that in Spanish? Who's gonna listen to us? What were the chances? And yet what Jesus said, it happened. Within 200 years, that little group of uneducated people in an unimportant part of the world, they changed the entire world. And the book of Acts is a story about that. Brothers and sisters, if they could do it, so could we. Do you really believe that? So, the outline of this class, we're going to ask, how was it? How was it they were able to change the entire world? Logically, it makes no sense. Now, I'm going to show you some logical reasons why they changed the world. But we can't forget Acts chapter 5, verse 38 and 39.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please. Léelo, por favor.
Dice, en este caso, yo les aconsejo que dejen a estos hombres y que no se metan con ellos, porque si este asunto es cosa de los hombres, pasará. Pero si es cosa de Dios, no podrán ustedes vencerlos. Tengan cuidado, no se vayan a encontrar escuchando propiedades.
Even the Pharisee, even Gamaliel recognized, if God is with them, nobody's going to be able to stop them. And I believe if God is with us, we can be the new PRI. Free! The real revolutionaries. So, here are the 5 points in my outline. Point number one, They knew Jesus. There's just something about a person who's had a personal encounter with Jesus. And I want to challenge everyone here. We too need to have a personal encounter with Jesus. Point number two. They had powerful truth. They had facts that couldn't be denied. They had evidence. We have that same evidence. Number three, they had ethical superiority. They lived a life that was completely different from all those around them. Thank you. And I believe the same can be for us. In the first century and the second and third century, everybody knew. The Christians were like nobody else. The first two points, I believe that's how the church got launched. It was the personal witnesses of Jesus and the evidence of his miracles and resurrection. But as Christianity spread 200 miles, 500 miles, 1,000 miles, I believe that would not have been enough. It was the lives of the disciples. Number four, the church offered answers to the questions. The Roman and Greek philosophy and religion, they had no answers. Intellectually, the church conquered the world. Number five, the church gave dignity to the poor and to the dispossessed and to the uneducated. No other religion was like this. They gave hope to everybody. And of course, we can't forget point number six, that God was with them. Now, let's go back to the first point. The life of Jesus. There was just something about people who had been with Jesus. And everybody knew that. The people who had been with Jesus, they were radically different. These people were crazy. You say to a Christian, we're going to take your house. They say, I already gave it away. They say to the Christians, we'll kill you. The Christian said, go ahead, do me a favor. They were different. If you've truly met Jesus, the people around you will say, what is it about that person? And you'll start a revolution. It was a Jesus movement. And the life of every single witness of Jesus, it was a testament to Jesus. There are hundreds of little Jesuses walking around. Let's go to Acts chapter 4. We could read all the way from verse 1 to 21, but let's just read 12 and 13.
Dice, en ningún otro hay salvación, porque en todo el mundo Dios no nos ha dado otra persona por la cual podamos salvarnos. Cuando las autoridades hicieron la valentía con que hablaban Pedro y Juan, se dieron cuenta de que eran hombres sin estudios ni cultura, se quedaron sorprendidos y reconocieron que eran discípulos de Jesús.
Just a few days before, these guys were hiding out.
Estaban escondiendo.
They were Jesus raised from the dead. They saw the risen Jesus. And these uneducated people, these people from the outside places, they stood in front of the most powerful leaders in the land, and they said, Jesus is the only hope. And what did these people say? They've been with Jesus. Have you been with Jesus? Do you want to see Jesus? Do you really want to see Jesus? Because if you do, other people, they're going to be afraid of you a little bit. Because people who've seen Jesus, their life is totally transformed. And here's my point. Everybody around them, they knew that. You pick out a Christian a mile away. What about Paul? He was out killing Christians. He hated everything they stand for. And then what happened? He met Jesus. He met Jesus on the road to Damascus. Some of us need to meet Jesus on La Calle Reforma. And if you do, your life will be totally different. If you want to take Mexico for Christ, you need to be a Jesus church. So point number one is people who met Jesus. People who understood who Jesus was. They were totally different. And everybody knew that. Most people hated that. But the ones who had a good heart, they said, I want to be like those people. Point number two. Powerful truth claims. You know, the early church, they had some good things going for them. For example, they had the empty tomb. People would say, who's this Jesus? Hey, have you checked out the tomb? He rose from the dead. You know, on the day of Pentecost, Peter stood up in front of maybe 10,000 people. He said, this guy Jesus, you know about him. He did signs and wonders and miracles. Everybody here knows that. Nobody said, I never heard about that. He did? Well, where was I? And that's sort of cool. The guy we're asking you to follow? He raised Lazarus from the dead. He walked on water. He told the storm to be quiet, and it did. That was kind of an advantage. Unbantache, yeah. And if you look at the outline of the sermons in Acts, they always started with the evidence. To the Jews, they said, he fulfilled all the prophecies of the Messiah. If you read the Old Testament, the Messiah has to be born in Bethlehem. That's in Micah chapter 5. He has to be raised in Galilee near Nazareth. That's in Isaiah 7. He has to be despised and rejected by men. He has to be silent when accused. He has to be pierced in the side. That's in Isaiah 53. He had to be crucified. That's in Psalm 22. His garments, they had to gamble over them. He had to be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver? That's in Zechariah chapter 11. And then in Daniel 9, it said he had to come to Jerusalem in the year 33 AD. Jesus did all those things. It's in the Old Testament. Jesus did that. What are you going to say about that? And then they said, not only did he fulfill the prophecies, he worked miracles. And everybody knew it. And then they said, he was raised from the dead. You know, if you have a Savior who was raised from the dead, that kind of changes things. You know, what about the leadership in the church? I don't know. Jesus was raised from the dead. Does it really matter? What about my family? What about my job? What about this? What about that? What about these smart people over here? I don't know, but Jesus was raised from the dead. Many, many passages in Acts, every time they were preaching, Jesus fulfilled the prophecies. Everybody knows it. Jesus worked miracles, hundreds of miracles. If you don't believe it, ask anybody. They were there. And the tomb was empty. In Acts chapter 26, versículo 24 27, yeah.
Se al decir Pablo esas cosas en su defensa, Festo gritó: Estás loco, Pablo, de tanto soñar te has vuelto loco. Él, Pablo, contestó: No soy loco, excelentísimo Festo, al contrario, lo que digo es razonable y es la verdad. Ahí está el rey Agripa que conoce bien estas cosas y por eso hablo con tanta libertad delante de él, porque estoy seguro de que él también sabe de todo eso, ya que no se trata de cosas sucedidas en un corazón vivo. Pero es majestad que lo que dijeron los profetas, yo sé que lo creo.
So Paul says to Festus,
Pablo dice a Festo,
I'm not out of my mind.
No soy loco.
This didn't happen in secret.
Esto no sucedió en secreto.
No, following Jesus is true and it's reasonable.
Seguir a Jesús es justo y razonable y verdadero.
And you know that.
Y tú sabes eso.
And then Festus says, oh, you want me to be a Christian?
Y Festus dijo, ah, ¿qué? ¿Quieres ser cristiano?
Paul says, exactly. I want you to have what I have.
Quiero que tengas lo que yo tengo.
Brothers and sisters,
hermanos,
we should be bold.
Debemos ser culpables.
The facts back it up.
Todos los hechos lo respaldan.
The tomb is empty to this very day. Jesus was raised from the dead. That's the second reason I believe the church spread very quickly. And when we share our faith, we need to confront people with the facts. The facts about Jesus. Number three. I believe the first two is what launched the church. But as you go forward, 50 years, 100 years, the original eyewitnesses were no longer alive. Of course, the Christians were still disciples. And the eyewitnesses who'd seen the miracles weren't around. And besides, they were now 1,000 miles away, 2,000 miles away. There were some other factors that explains why the church conquered the world. And if you read church history, you can see this happening. You can read the writings of those who opposed the church. Because they talked about what the church was like. Point number three. Ethically. Ethically. Ethicals. They were superior to the world. They were different. Everywhere the Christians went, people noticed, these people are different. They're not like us. They make us look bad. Because they do what we say we ought to do. Their lives were examples. They weren't weird. What made them different was a moral life. In Acts chapter 17, let's read verse 5 through 7.
Pero esto dice que los judíos que no creían se llenaran de celos y se reunieran a unos malvados que andaban ociosos por la calle para calumniar y perturbar la ciudad. Atacaron además la casa de Jasón, buscando a Pablo y a Silas para sacarlos y entregarlos a la gente. Pero como no los encontraron allí, llevaron a rastras a Jasón y a algunos de sus hermanos ante las autoridades de la ciudad gritando: esos hombres que han trastornado el mundo entero también han venido acá. Jasón los ha recibido de su casa. Todos ellos están violando las leyes del emperador, pues sí que hay otro rey que es Jesús.
Everywhere the church went, they caused a lot of trouble. Why? Because they were different. They would look at the people doing adultery or worldly entertainment. They had nothing to do with it. It made people look bad. Everywhere they went, they turned the world upside down. I'm afraid some of you, you want to blend in with the world. You don't want to be different. You want everybody to like you. In my heart, I want everybody to like me. I wanted to think, I'm one of them. But when I became a Christian, I became an alien. All of us are aliens. Not from outer space, but we're aliens. What's the word for alien? We're strangers in this world. We don't fit in. And we're not weird because we wear weird clothes. We're not weird because we have strange hairdos. Because we live like Jesus. I'm going to read some quotes from the early centuries from those who criticized the church. Here's what they said about the Christians. They said to the Christians, every country is like a foreign land. And every foreign land is like their own country. In other words, they were comfortable living anywhere. Because their home was in heaven. I'm not an American. I'm a Christian. My home is in heaven. And the Christians, they didn't feel comfortable in this world. Because this world is not their home. You could threaten the Christians. Didn't bother them at all. When they would have persecutions of the church, the Christians would all go to that city because of the honor of being killed for their faith. The elders in the different churches says, no, don't go there. They say, please don't go there. But the Christians would go there for the honor of being thrown in prison for their faith. These people were different from the world. Another quote. It says, their strangeness The church. Their differentness. It wasn't strange clothes. It's because, not because they didn't use technology, but they accepted an ethic that the world thinks is nonsense. See, to the Christian, everything the world says is important, they say, that's worthless. And everything the world says is worthless, they say that's what's of value. The world values money, power, position. You couldn't tempt the Christians with that. The Romans, they were so frustrated. Anybody else, you give them money, they say, okay. And the Christians, you try to give them money, they say, thank you very much. Because I turn it down. It's like Daniel. The king said, I'll give you the third place in the kingdom. Daniel said, you could keep that. But I'm going to do what's right anyway. You know, to the Greeks, they had this idea of what a perfect person would be like. They had the idea of what a perfect person would be like. They had the list of 7 virtues. But they believed only the philosopher could be like that. Only the person who completely dedicated their life. Maybe they could approach living like that. Then they had Christians, poor people, with no education, and they lived like philosophers. The purity and the self-sacrifice of the Christians changed the world. And everywhere they went, the morality in those cities changed. There was a philosopher, his name was Galen. And he described the Christian church. He said, they live a lifestyle which is the same as a true philosopher. To the Greeks, they couldn't understand this. But you know what? The people with pure hearts, they said, I want to have what they have. That's what your life should be like. A lot of people say, get that person out of my face. They make me look bad. They are what I wish I could be. But the ones with pure hearts, they'll say, I want to have what you have. They didn't participate in the entertainment. They wouldn't go to the arena. They wouldn't go to the plays. They loved purity. Galen said, their lives are especially noticeable because of the way they're pure in their marriages and their self-control about food and drink. Everybody knew it. You know, you could kill the Christians, and for every Christian they killed in the arena, 10 people in the arena became Christians. So finally they stopped killing the Christians because it didn't work. They lived amazing lives. What about you? You know, the Christians, they went into Ephesus and suddenly you couldn't sell idols anymore. And they had like a union for selling idols. And they started a riot. And they said, long live Artemis! Long live Artemis! That's where it happened.
Eso fue lo que sucedió.
There's where it happened. They had a riot. If we live the life of Jesus, there might be a riot in Tijuana. I say, bring it on. We need to be different. I want to challenge you. Do you want to start a revolution in Mexico for Jesus? You better live a revolutionary life. Don't try to blend in. Mexico, it's not your home. Your home is in heaven. They could send you to El Salvador. They could send you to China. You're at home everywhere. Because your home is in heaven. Point number four. The church won the battle at the university. The picture there, that's the Areopagus. Let's go to Acts chapter 17. Because that's where Paul preached the sermon. Paul went to the highest universities. Unam. And he preached Jesus. Now, a lot of us, I think we're intimidated by the philosophers, by the professors, by the smart people. And I think we've given up. We've given up that ground. But we shouldn't do that. Because I believe the Christian worldview is far better than anything the world has to offer. That's what Paul did. He went to the Areopagus. Let's read verse 16 and 17. He went to the lecture hall of the university. San Diego State. I forget the university I spoke at yesterday. Yeah. And he preached there. And at first people scoffed. But by the second century and the third century, Christian philosophy, it defeated pagan philosophy. Because the church offered answers. There's many ideas out there. Today we have postmodernism. We have modernism. We have materialism. Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam. I say Christian philosophy is much better than any other philosophy. Yeah, San Diego State, that's right. The Christian worldview. A worldview is a set of ideas we use to explain the world. And the Christian worldview is, it's the right one. It's the one that works. And in Acts chapter 17, Paul compared the Christian view to the view of the Greek philosophers, the Stoics. No, the Stoics and the Epicureans. Let's read in Acts chapter 17, verse 16 and 17.
Mientras Pablo esperaba en Atenas a Silas y Timoteo, se indignó mucho al ver que la ciudad estaba llena de ídolos. Por eso, discutía en la sinagoga con los judíos y con otros que adoraban a Dios, y cada día discutía igualmente en la plaza con los que allí se reunían.
So Paul says, he talked about the gospel here. And he reasoned with them. He said, let's consider your philosophy.
Vamos a considerar tu filosofía.
Let's consider the Christian philosophy.
Vamos a considerar la filosofía cristiana.
You preach a God who's very, very distant.
Tú predicas de un Dios que está muy, muy lejos.
He says, I see you even have a temple for an unknown God. I want to tell you about that unknown God. He's the one who lives near you. He's not distant. Because the Greek said God is unknowable. God is so far above us, He could never know us and we could never know Him.
But
Paul says, the God that I worship, in Him we live, we move, and we have our life. He says, He's prepared the time and place for us. This is the God who wants to be known by you and wants to know you. So much better than the gods of the Greeks and the Romans. To me, a good worldview, it's one that's true. It's one that answers the questions that people want to ask. And it's one that makes people better. And Christianity won on all those grounds. Because even in the second and third century, Christianity offered answers that were much better than the Greek philosophers. And that's what Paul explained in Acts chapter 17. You know, I'm a scientist. So I deal with a lot of atheists and people like that. Most of them are nice people. Some of my friends are atheists. But I'm not intimidated by them intellectually, not at all. You know, I teach science. Science is really good at answering some questions. How many? Where? When? How? But I think, I don't care about those questions. The questions I care about are, can we go forward? Okay, good. Why is there suffering in the world? See, the Greek philosopher said, God isn't involved in the world. That was the Stoics. They said, too bad. You're all alone. But Paul said, I preach a God who's close, who's nearby. The Greek said, for suffering, says, don't involve yourself. Don't become emotionally involved. But the Christian response to suffering is compassion. And because of that, they change the world. The questions that people really care about, why am I here? Science says it was an accident. Another question people care about is, what's my value? Science says about 30 pesos. Some calcium, some iron. The Christian answer, you are more valuable than the entire universe. That's a better answer. The world has no answers. The postmodernist says, nothing's true. Boy, that really, really helps me out there. Jesus said, I am the truth. And the truth came to the earth. That's what God, Paul revealed to the philosophers. In Acts chapter 16, he said, God created everything. You know what's interesting? interesting. Like I said at the university yesterday, scientists figured it out. The universe was created. Greek philosophy said it wasn't created. Hindus and Buddhists, they say the world wasn't created. But in Hebrews 11:3 it says, by faith we know the universe was created. Paul said God is very close to us. He wants to have a relationship with us. No other religion offers this. Even in Islam. In Islam, God is very distant. He's not a loving God. He's a merciful God, but not a loving God. No human could ever make this up. But that's the God that Paul preached. I believe we can win the battle at the university. Because the Christian worldview answers the questions people have. And Paul responded to their worldview. He even quoted their philosophers. Aretas, he was a Stoic philosopher. He said, we are his offspring. Paul said, exactly. We're his offspring. And he wants to love us and to know us. You know, many people laughed at Paul. But many were converted. And within 200 or 300 years, Christian philosophy defeated the Stoics and the Epicureans and all other Greek philosophers. Who would have thought in 30 AD Jesus said to the apostles, you're going to conquer the world. And even at the universities, they conquered the world. I have a lot more to say about that, but I don't have time. So I want to get to my last point. We're going to go about 10 slides here. Maybe 15 slides. Okay. Oh my goodness, many slides. All right, last point. Point number five. The church met the needs of the world. Greek philosophy was for the educated, for the aristocrats. They had nothing to offer to the common people. Religion was for the wealthy. It was for the influential. But Christianity offered hope to the poorest people. Who came into the church? The poor. The uneducated. The women. Every other religion in the world said women were not important. But who were Jesus' closest friends? Women. Who was the first one at the tomb that announced the resurrection of Jesus? It's no accident. It was women. Jesus gave equal honor to the educated and to the uneducated, to the sick, to the healthy. This was a complete revolution. No idea in the world had ever preached what Jesus preached. You know what's amazing? That the church lived it out. I mean, the Christian response to suffering was compassion. Jesus had a compassion ministry. And everywhere the church went, they spread compassion. Hospitals were invented by Christianity. If it were not for Christianity, we wouldn't have science. We wouldn't have women's rights. The idea of individual freedom, it came from Christianity. Almost everything we value in the modern world, it was given to the world by Christianity. We should be proud of that. In Acts chapter 2, verse 44 and 45, it said, all the believers were together, and they shared everything in common. Nobody's needs went unmet. In Acts chapter 3, verse 6 through 10, the apostles were healing people. And the people said, give us miracles. And they said, we don't have silver. We don't have money. Can you relate to that? Don't have silver, don't have money? But he said, in the name of Jesus Christ, get up and walk. You know, we don't have money. We don't have silver. We don't have gold. But we offer life. We offer compassion. We offer love. All the needs were met in Acts chapter 4, 32. Acts chapter 5, verse 12. All the needs were met. Well, a few more slides. That's right. Yeah, there we go. Perfect. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. The church offered compassion to the sick. Let's read a quote from Julian the Apostate.
Back.
There you go. Go ahead. 1 minute. Julian the Apostate, he was a Roman emperor. And he tried to turn the Roman emperor back to paganism. Away from Christianity. And when he's talking about the atheists, he's talking about the Christians. They called the Christians atheists because they didn't worship all the gods. So let's see what Julian had to say about the church.
Ha progresado oficialmente a través del servicio amoroso otorgado a los extraños y a través de su cuidado en la sepultura de los muertos. Es un escándalo que no hay un solo judío que sea indigente y que el galileo, sin fe, solo cuida a sus propios pobres, sino también a los nuestros. Mientras nosotros buscamos en vano ayuda que nos debemos dar a nosotros a los nuestros.
So Julian said, it's really frustrating. These Christians, not only do they take care of their own people, but they even help us pagans out. How are we going to get rid of them? They're so good. Everybody knew it. There was a plague in the city of Alexandria. In Egypt. And all the pagans, what they would do, when a member of their family got the plague, they threw them out into the street. And the Christians came by with carts, and they brought them to their churches and helped them to get well. Many Christians died, but the church grew. That's the way we are. We have compassion. We care about people. We're going to meet the physical needs. We're going to meet the spiritual needs. We're going to meet the emotional needs. And the world will be one to Christ. And that's how they started hospitals. Taking care of the needs of the pagans. And they changed the world. Do you want to have a revolution in Mexico? Do you want to turn things upside down? Well, a few things. Let me give you a few suggestions. You need to meet Jesus. You need to see the Jesus in the Gospels. You need to confront Jesus. Because if you do, you're going to become a powerful person. The world can't intimidate you at all. Like Paul, you see Jesus, and you live a life of sacrifice. Number two, we have the truth. We have the evidence. Don't be intimidated by those people. They laugh at Christianity. We laugh at them, but in a nice way. And besides, what we have answers the questions. Everything the world is looking for, we're the only place that has the answers. And we're going to live lives that are different. What they only wish they could do, we're going to be different. We're going to live lives that are ethically different than the world. And we're going to offer a place that gives dignity to the old, to the young, from the country, from the city, to the educated and the uneducated. We're all brothers and sisters in Christ. I believe we can have a revolution right here in Tijuana. We have a much better situation than they did. They had 30 or 40 people. They didn't even speak the language. We have 200 here. Y hablamos la lengua. I believe it could be done. I believe we could have another revolution. Because we have Jesus. And besides, don't forget Acts chapter 5. Verse 26. It says, if God is with them, no one will be able to stop them. Thank you very much. Good job, Marisa.
Amén. Qué gran mensaje, qué gran tiempo pasamos hoy, ¿verdad? Aprendiendo de la palabra de Dios. Gracias, John. Creo que